Welcome to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. Well, it's a very special day in the life of the United States. It's Mardi Gras, isn't it? Is
yeah,
that what we're all
Mardi
lined
Gras,
up about?
Mardi Gras. Fat Tuesday.
This is Tom Drew has joined me to talk about politics on this Super Tuesday, and we're joined by telephone with Professor William Luchtenberg and Professor Farrell Guillory, each associated with the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Professor Luchtenberg, thanks for generously sharing your time with us.
Nice to be with you again, D.G.
And Farrell Guillory, I guess are you on the way to Raleigh? Are you in Raleigh? Are you
yeah,
in Chapel?
I'm headed down the hill on 54.
Oh, my golly. Well,
I will try to be careful.
Be real careful as you talk to us. What we want to do.
Right, it's Mardi Gras, too. And every Mardi Gras, I worry about being 900 miles away from where the real action is.
You better watch out. That car of yours might just turn on 15501 and head south.
Yeah, you're only 11 hours away there, Farrell.
I could make it.
Well, let's talk it about history and about the United States. Professor Luchtenberg, we're right on the verge of knowing a little bit more about our presidential primary or our presidential nomination selection process. And I can't believe we've got the preeminent historian of the presidency to sort of help us put this in context. And have we ever, what in American presidential selection history approaches what we're going through right now here on as we line up for Super Tuesday?
Well, clearly we have never had a serious African-American candidate. We've never had a serious woman candidate. We've never had a Mormon who was being considered. So in that sense, surely this is a unique election.
What about the lineup, Professor Luchtenberg, in terms of the selection process? We've transitioned from a convention-based selection process when you sort of, which was in play when you first started observing it, to a kind of crazy selection process that involves in a caucus and primary selection process. But are we moving back towards in either party towards the importance of a convention? Could Super Tuesday send us to a selection that is going to be decided by convention?
Well, that's possible for the first time in many years. The likelihood is that McCain is going to come out tonight as the forerunner, and he may be a prohibitive favorite. But on the Democratic side, the most recent polls show Clinton and Obama virtually even, and neither one is likely to finish up tomorrow morning with a decided advantage. At least that's the way things look now. And it may go on week after week and conceivably as far as the convention. And that would be a new experience for this generation.
You know, Dr. Luchtenberg, this is Tom Drew and Farrell. You know, in 1984, Walter Mondale lost New Hampshire to Gary Hart and barely won Super Tuesday, but spun it like it was a giant victory. And I wonder what kind of spin we'll see both from Clinton and Obama tomorrow.
Well, my colleague Leroy Towns and I were talking about this today.
This is Farrell Guillory talking. Go ahead, Farrell.
Others have talked about you're likely to have both candidates on the Democratic side, both Senator Clinton and Senator Obama, spinning tonight as a victory because both are likely to get a large amount of delegates and to win one state or another. Justice Bill Luchtenberg has said it's likely to go on, but both candidates are likely under the proportional representation rules to pick up a substantial number of delegates and to be propelled forward. My other thought about, you know, it going on to a brokered convention, nobody has any experience with a brokered convention who's still alive. The old, you know, the Jim Farley, the Robert Strausses are all gone. If we get to a brokered convention, we likely have to call time out and commission Bill Luchtenberg to hold a tutorial for party leaders on how to do this.
Farrell, do you have a sense, I know on the Democratic side there, and on the Republican side to a lesser degree, but on the Democratic side, a number of delegates are sort of the party bigwigs who will be able to, maybe they're better able to make these decisions than ordinary delegates would be.
Well, yes and no. You know, the creation of superdelegates, these party leaders and elected officials, was a product of a reform commission that David Price was the Congressman David Price, now Congressman. He was the staff director, and former Governor Jim Hunt was the commission chair that produced the reform of the leavening agent of superdelegates. But let's be realistic about it. Superdelegates are political leaders, politicians. They are likely to want to know and pay attention to the results in their own states and in their own districts. So superdelegates are clearly free in the sense that they can go to one candidate or the other, but they are also subject to the political pull of what happens within their own constituencies. And that's why I say nobody alive right now has really run a brokered convention, not even the superdelegates. And so it would be a new experience for everyone and an uncertain one at best.
Farrell, let me ask you this question. I'd love for Professor Lechtenberg to chime in. The other possibility is, and this will be a question, that the North Carolina primary, which is months away, might have a decisive impact on the result on the result of the nominating process. Is that a possibility?
Yeah, it's certainly a possibility. Any number of states who will be voting later, as late as May, could have an influence that they've not had in years past. Usually, by the time it comes to North Carolina, it's all over. I'd like also to respond to Tom's question. It's true that both candidates, as both Democratic candidates, are going to put a spin on the election, but there's the further question of which spin is going to be the more credible. And we're likely to find this out fairly early in the evening. The first state that we'll know something about is Georgia, which initially figured to be a Clinton state. Obama has been gaining and appears, according to the Atlanta Constitution, to have moved a bit ahead. If he does carry that state, that is going to be a sign that he is in this race for a long time to come. If he loses, then we're going to figure that his strength in the polls has been exaggerated.
Well, Farrell, I promised I'd let you go, but I wonder if before you go, you'd give us a sense, just focusing on Georgia, where there was 10 or 15% support, at least for John Edwards, where that kind of John Edwards support is likely to go in places like Georgia. Do you have a feeling for that as the preeminent observer of Southern politics?
My sense of it is the Edwards support is split. It would tend to lean toward Obama. To the extent that John Edwards' support reaches into the blue-collar middle class, the blue-collar vote has tended to go toward Clinton. Obama, in some respects, is an inheritor of the Adlai Stevenson brand of Democratic Party politics, and that tends to be somewhat more upscale, great appeal to younger voters. Clinton, on the other hand, has done better with blue-collar labor, with older women for whom She is the epitome of someone who has broken through glass ceilings. And so so I think in terms of change, the yearning for change that Edwards helped foster, his support tends to go to Obama. But I think there are a certain segment of Edwards voters for whom Clinton would be very...
Well, Farrell, as always, wise and wise counsel, we look forward to having you join us tomorrow morning in the 8 o'clock hour with Ryan Stutz as we assess some of our assessments of this and see if we were right. We're going to take a break. Bill Lechtenberg is going to stay with us. We're going to talk more about history of the primary selection process. Tom Drew will be with us. We'll be right back after this short announcement. Welcome back to Who's Talking. I'm D.G. Martin. We're talking about Super Tuesday. That's right here on us, and we're taking the risky steps of prognosticating a little bit about what might happen. I'm joined in the studio by my political expert, Tom Drew. We're joined on the telephone by Professor William Lechtenberg, and also from Raleigh, two of the states' most distinguished political experts, Gary Pierce on the Democratic side and Carter Wren on the Republican side, all of us seeking to give some, I guess, some light on this process.
Wisdom
on this process. Gary, welcome. Carter,
thank you,
welcome.
Thank you.
We're talking to Bill Lechtenberg just a little bit about the historical perspective of this process. And Bill Lechtenberg, you lived in New York for a long time.
Yes.
And New York, next to California, New York is the largest state, I guess, in terms of the production of delegates. And, you know, a kind of crazy selection process. Is New York important to either party in this, other than just the number of delegates? Does it matter to the country who wins up there?
Well, today, as far as the Democrats go, there's no question that Hillary Clinton is going to capture her own state. The only issue will be how well does Obama do? If he cuts deeply into her victory percentage, the spin from the Obama camp will be that is really an indication of her lack of strength.
That his close call is really a victory.
That is that, yeah.
So we can hear that spin coming early tomorrow morning, late tonight, early tomorrow morning.
Yeah. And this is also going to be related to how well Clinton does in her territory, because among the states that are going to be voting today, or are voting right at the moment, are Connecticut, New Jersey, Massachusetts, and Delaware, all in the Northeast. That has figured to be Clinton territory until now. Surprisingly, the latest polls show Clinton and Obama even in Connecticut, and show subsequent to Ted Kennedy's endorsement, Obama with a lead in Massachusetts. Now, if Obama were to win those two states, and we have no notion of whether he will, those two would be enormous victories for him.
Well, Tom, you got a question, I think.
Yeah, I'd like to ask Carter if he saw Fox News charged Mike Huckabee today with taking votes from Romney with West Virginia in conspiracy with John McCain. I can't believe that's really going on.
Well, I did not see Fox News today, but, you know, I've heard a lot of talk about the same thing, because I expect that Huckabee does take more votes out of Romney than he does McCain. But, you know, whether there's any conspiracy or not, or whether Huckabee is just, you know, playing for a long shot, there's no way to know the answer to that.
Mm-hmm. Well, following up on that, Carter, we got excited about Governor Huckabee after the Iowa caucuses, because he seemed to startle us with his coming from just zero to the top. What Is it all over for him now in terms of this presidential contest, or is there any scenario in which he might play a part?
Well, you know, it's probably all but over with. I think that the elections on both sides are sort of sorting out by their demographics now. And Huckabee captured the evangelical voter in the Republican Party very early, and he's held most of them. But he hasn't been able to go beyond that. I think he's tried very adroitly, but the simple fact is that the moderates and the more pro-war people, they look at McCain and he suits them, and the economic conservatives tend to prefer Romney, although he's got a little baggage. So I think that, you know, they're just sort of on their flight paths now, and it's you know, more and more difficult for Huckabee to reach out beyond his base at this point. So it's hard to see him breaking out. Now, he can win some primaries in states where they have more evangelical votes, but that's his best opportunity.
Gary, I was with the co-chair of the Clinton campaign last week, and he told me North Carolina is actually going to be important this time around.
Well, it would have to last a long time for that to happen. That's 3 months away, and there are a lot of big states. You know, it may be more likely that it be decided in March when you have Texas and Ohio. If it lasts as long as North Carolina, that would really be an amazing thing. We may actually be looking at either an open convention or a nomination that's decided by the so-called superdelegates, who are about 800 of the 4,000 total delegates. And I should add a creation of my old boss, Jim Hunt, back in the early 80s, this concept of superdelegates. So, you know, it could come out that way.
Do y'all see governors who will have a lot of control over these superdelegates jockeying for Washington posts post-election, using their delegate strength to try to win over a person for the nomination?
You know, I don't know. There'll be some jockeying like that. The truth is the politicians, elected officials, party officials who are the superdelegates have one concern above all, and that's their own political hide. So they will be figuring out what it is, which candidate it is they think is better in their state or helps them with a constituency where they need help. And that's going to be a complicated thing. It's sort of like tonight. The only prediction I'd be willing to make tonight, DG, is you're going to see five presidential candidates all claiming victory.
Well, Gary Pierce, you're having worked with Governor Hunt for so long, you're well positioned to answer this. And Carter Wren, you are as well, having operated to try to understand which national candidates would help your local Republican candidates. And Bill Luckenberg, you've watched this from afar many times. So I want each of the three of you to put yourselves in the shoes of the North Carolina political leaders and assess for us the strengths of, very quickly, the remaining candidates on each side and what you think, if you were the party chair of each of the parties, you would be leaning towards if you were a superdelegate, who you'd be voting for. And Gary, let's start with you.
I expect the party leaders here feel more comfortable with Hillary Clinton, just because they're more sort of establishment and predictable, but they could be wrong about that. The fact is, Obama has a higher upside as well as a lower downside in terms of what he could do in November. And I will tell you, in terms of Republicans, I think all the North Carolina Democrats are hoping that Mitt Romney will get the nomination and not John McCain.
Well, Carter Wren, do you agree with your colleague there?
Partly. I think McCain might have a little more strength with independent voters. But for Republicans, the main thing is not our nominee, but the Democrat nominee.
Who would you like for them to serve up to the Republicans in North Carolina to jump on?
I would expect Obama would have a harder time because of his inexperience. But the bottom line is that I don't think either Hillary or Obama is going to carry North Carolina. I may end up eating those words, but I think basically the Democrat nominee sets the Republican vote. That's what really matters to us more than whether our nominee is McCain, Huckabee, or Romney.
it's a negative reaction
It's a negative vote.
Carter, you know, you talk eloquently and poignantly about the role of race in sort of politics in North Carolina and how it can be used. And here we are with the possibility that the National Democrats would elect a black candidate or nominate a black candidate. And when you put the factor of race today versus the factor of race, say, in 1972, is it different in North Carolina, or is it just, or are we just pretending that it's changed a little bit? How do you size it up?
Well, it's a little different, but to some extent, I think that we may pretend it's changed more than it has. I mean, if you look at South Carolina in a Democratic primary, voters polarized on race. 80% of the African Americans voted for Obama, and 75% of the white voters voted against him. So it's a factor, but I think the real question there is how he deals with it, and he's dealt with it really well. So I wouldn't expect it would be anything that would hurt him a lot in a general election. Might even turn it into a positive.
Well, Bill Lechtenberg, you've heard the local experts pontificate. They've given us really good advice about this, and I wonder if you have a different perspective, having watched politics for so long.
Well, I think the only thing that has not been said, and I think the comments that we've just heard have both been excellent, is that the Republican Party, the party of Abraham Lincoln, was the home for African-American voters all the way down on through the 1932 election. It started changing in 1936, and by now 90-95% of the African-American vote is likely to go Democratic. That's certainly been the case in past years. So Obama does not bring particular strength in that regard to the Democratic ticket, unless he affects turnout. And African Americans have not voted in the same proportion of their registration as white voters have. And it's conceivable that Obama will bring out, if he gets the nomination, far more African American voters than have gone to the polls in the past.
All those are good factors. Jeff Hamlin signaled me that it's time for us to take a break. We'll be right back, and we'll bring you the leading experts in North Carolina to help us assess what's going to happen on the Super Tuesday count. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking? This is D.G. Martin. I'm joined here in the studio by Tom Drew. Tom and I are visiting by telephone with Carter Wren and with Gary Pierce in Raleigh. They're the leading North Carolina political experts, Gary on the Democratic side and Carter Wren on the Republican side. And to help us put it all in perspective, we've got Professor William Lechtenberg. Tom Drew told me during the break that he's got a question for all three of you.
Well, one of the things I want to hear you all address is, I don't understand how Hillary Clinton appeals to Hispanics, and how big is the Hispanic vote factor going to be in North Carolina? Because I think Hispanic votes are a sleeping giant both nationally and locally.
Well, Gary, how about you? You watch on the Democratic side. The Hispanic vote, is it more just for being nice and rather than for any substantial benefit for North Carolina candidates, statewide candidates at this point?
Well, North Carolina is not at all significant. I mean, despite the growing Hispanic population, only about 1% of the electorate in North Carolina is Hispanic. So it's not a factor here. It's obviously much bigger in a lot of other states, and in particularly California, Arizona, New Mexico, Colorado, states like that. And a part of the reason, I think there are two reasons Hillary gets that vote. One is just sort of the association with Bill Clinton and an appeal that they have across the board to working class candidates, to working class voters. But the other thing, and Carter touched on this, I mean, there's a clear racial divide in the Democratic Party, and it's not just between whites and African Americans in South Carolina. There's a strong racial divide across the country between African Americans and Hispanics. Hispanics have not shown a willingness or an interest in voting for an African American candidate.
Now, Gary, are they, you're in a nice way, are you saying that many Hispanics are racist when it comes to picking their political candidates?
I wouldn't say racist.
I know you wouldn't say that, but is that the effect of it?
Well, what's really happening here is that this is all comes about because of a competition for jobs. And so, the strongest group of the population in terms of being anti-immigration are African Americans. So, I mean, that's just a fact. Whether you call that racist or not, it certainly is racial.
How about you, Carter? You watch this kind of stuff. How do you size it up?
Well, I think that the point is that, and I think Gary's right, that when you have an African American candidate, just like when you have a woman candidate, it changes the race. It brings certain assets and carries certain problems. And I think Gary's right in what he's saying. I think that Hillary's strength with Latinos is mostly Bill and partly race.
Bill Luckenberg, is this something new in American politics? Are you comfortable sort of finding a historical analogy for this competition that our colleagues have described between and among African-Americans and Hispanics for the leadership and participation, and that there's some, some reluctance? You'd think, as being an outsider, that is a white male, you'd think that the minorities would sort of find a way to make coalition to get their some of the kinds of things that both groups need.
Well, historically, in the 19th century, there was strong prejudice by Yankees against the immigrants to the United States. Nonetheless, Irish Americans gravitated to the Democratic Party. German Americans, Scandinavian Americans, gravitated to the Republican Party. So that's not so surprising. It's in keeping with our past. I do think we've got to be careful about generalizing about so-called Hispanic vote. In places like Dade County, where there are immigrants who are anti-Castro Cubans, it tends to be Republican. In the poorer sections of the Southwest, it tends to be Democratic. And we only have very limited polls showing Hillary Clinton ahead in New Mexico to indicate that she's doing better with Hispanic voters. We'll know better about that tomorrow.
Well, let me ask all of you, Tom Drew, you're included, about this. We were shocked about this time last week with the withdrawal from the presidential race of John Edwards. And I'd like for you to help me size up what you think this race would have been, what impact John Edwards would have had on this Super Tuesday primary, if anything. And Gary, you... there's no way to. I don't want to ask you to give expert advice about this, but surely you've got a hunch about your thinking about what Edwards would have gained or lost had he participated. I think you said you were a little bit surprised when he did withdraw. So, what would he have stood to gain or lose had he participated in Super Tuesday?
Well, looking at it coldly, I think what he's stood to gain was to accumulate delegates and maybe be able at some point later on to be the kingmaker. But, of course, the other side of that is you keep getting beaten every week. There's incredible pressure on you to get out. Now, what's interesting is, of course, he has not endorsed. My guess is that if he endorsed, it would be Obama, the change candidate against Hillary. But I suspect maybe more of Edwards' voters end up going to Hillary because, again, we come to this uncomfortable conversation about race. The fact is, it looks from the polling like some of the votes that Edwards was getting really had nothing to do with issues or probably nothing to do with character. They had to do with race and gender. And a lot of the, they were mainly white voters. A lot of those may have already migrated to Hillary.
Carter Wren, do you have a perspective on what Edwards might have expected out of this Super Tuesday and why he might have gotten out before it happened?
Well, you know, I think that, Edwards was in a position where his option was just to hang around. And there's nothing wrong with that. He could just hold on and hope for a break. And sometimes in politics you get a break. And if he'd have gotten a big one, then maybe he would have had a way back into the race, as unlikely as it sounds. And, you know, most times when a candidate gets in that position, he just gets tired of getting pounded on and of the emotional roller coaster, and he just throws in the towel. So, you know, I expect that he was sort of tempted with the prospect of just holding on and hoping something grand happened. But eventually you either give out of money, and that usually is the curtain for a campaign, or you just get so worn out, you just say, to heck with it.
You know, the word from the Edwards camp was that Edwards would have been the hardest Democrat for the Republicans to beat. That is, that he did better in the head-to-head matchups. Are you then glad, are you and fellow Republicans glad that Edwards is out because you would have feared him as a candidate more than Hillary or Obama?
I might be wrong, DG, but I don't buy that at all. I think that with Hillary, you know what you're getting. What you see is what you get. And Obama's pretty much run straightforward as he is from the left. I think Edwards had the additional baggage of having run one way in the past and another way this year. And I think he had some character issues about him that would have raised some questions. I don't buy the argument that he would have been a stronger candidate.
As a experienced political operative who you know, who knows how to go for the weaknesses of candidates, you would have liked to have had him served up
Think of it this way, DG. When everybody said Edwards would have been the stronger candidate, they were basing it on the fact he ran as a moderate 4 years ago. Well, he didn't run as a moderate this time. He ran as you know, to the left of Obama.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think that those flip-flops and changes, I don't think he would have been a very strong candidate.
It's been interesting because only a union or two from Edwards has come over and endorsed Obama, and everybody else has kind of sat on the sidelines watching what will happen with Hillary. And so I agree with what Carter's saying. The other thing, too, is I thought the only reason for Edwards to make an endorsement, and that both sides wanted an endorsement very badly, would be, once again, to broker something in his future. And that wouldn't be a VP. That would be something in Washington. And I don't think there was any success in doing that.
Let me ask Bill Luckenberg a question about the Edwards endorsement and the value of Edwards' endorsement in current times, and the value of endorsements by defeated candidates in the nominating process in the past. And Bill, do you put a lot of value on the endorsements of candidates like John Edwards?
Not really. I think that we've seen, though, that the Schwarzenegger endorsement and the Ted Kennedy endorsement in recent days each appears to have been more effective than some of those endorsements have been in the past. Edwards doesn't have a bunch of voters, delegates that he can simply turn over to another candidate. But since he is the most conspicuous candidate other than the first two, if he were to have made an endorsement of either one, there would have been a sense that that's where the momentum is.
Well, we're going to take a quick break. We're talking about Super Tuesday and some of the side issues of that with Gary Pierce and Carter Wren in Raleigh, with Bill Luckenberg in Chapel Hill, Tom Drew in the studio, and all of us will be right back after this short break. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. It's Super Tuesday, and I've got the privilege of visiting with some of the greatest political experts in North Carolina, including Tom Drew, who is with me in the studio, Carter Wren and Gary Pierce over in Raleigh, and Professor William Lechtenberg here in Chapel Hill. Guys, I think all of us have just been stunned by the resurrection of, you know who I'm talking about? Carter, the Republican candidate who was written off of 6 months ago, has been resurrected. And, you know, the Democrat, we got to turn to you to explain this to it. How did John McCain do this?
Well, not to take anything away from McCain, who had the determination to hang in there through a tough time.
In fact, you know, he kind of hung around like you were talking about John Edwards hanging around, and everybody was kind of saying, oh my gosh, it's going to be so embarrassing.
And then he did get a break because Giuliani, who was McCain's main competitor for votes early in the primaries, because they were appealing to the same people, Giuliani marched off the battlefield, and he decided not to try to compete in Iowa and New Hampshire and South Carolina, and in effect, he just abandoned a big piece of vote to McCain, and they naturally went to McCain, and that's really a key piece. Giuliani's strategy is really the second key piece to McCain's comeback.
Is there a lesson for Democrats, Republicans, for aspiring politicians? Is it never give up, never give up, never give up, or is there something more complicated?
No, I think that's the first lesson. The second lesson is I don't think we're going to see anybody ignoring the first four primaries anytime again.
Bill Lechtenberg, you have a historical perspective about that. It's easy in hindsight to criticize Giuliani, but some of us thought that maybe he was smart not to compete where he was sure to lose.
Oh, well, I can't say I was one of them, D.G.
I've never accused you of being wrong. I have never found you wrong. I've never found you wrong.
I think that I'm going back to on the Democratic side. I remember when Mario Cuomo was being talked about as the Democratic presidential nominee. Somebody said that there's nobody between the Potomac and the Pedernales who's ever heard of anybody named Mario. And Giuliani had to establish himself as a plausible candidate early on and failed to do it.
Well, I guess that means that we're going to be subsidizing corn for the rest of our lives anyway. Now, we just got a minute, but let's go around the table and a word of wisdom from all of you, starting with you, Tom Drew, about 30 seconds.
Well, it'll be interesting to see if these candidates can pick up momentum, whoever the nominee is, after the convention, because it's going to be a worn-out process by convention time.
Well, Gary Pierce.
Well, I think after tonight, again, you're going to see five candidates claiming victory. Huckabee's already been on TV talking about his big victory in West Virginia. So I think we wake up tomorrow and we're just as confused as we are today, and we go on to whatever's next.
Bill Lechtenberg.
I would just like to put the notion of the possibility of a brokered convention in historical perspective. The last time that the choice of a Democratic presidential nominee went beyond one ballot was 1952 in Chicago. I was at that convention. I was Averell Harriman's delegate analyst. And to give you a sense of what that means, how far back that is, nobody younger than 77 years old voted in that election.
Well, Bill Lechtenberg, I think we got a new a job for you 60 years later. I bet you can get a job as a delegate counter in the upcoming brokered convention on one side or another. Gosh, it's been a great pleasure to visit with you guys. And I'm hoping that all of you will join us with Ron Stutz in the 8 o'clock morning hour tomorrow as we will second guessing about Super Tuesday. Want to thank Tom Drew, Gary Pierce. I want to thank Carter Wren and Bill Lechtenberg. I want to thank all you and Jeff Hamlin for helping us get through this, and all of y'all for listening. We'll be back same time day after tomorrow, and we will be back in the 8 o'clock hour with Ron Stutz tomorrow.